shouted, arching, grabbing for Fenris's back. Fenris met her stare again, ripping into Cairn's shoulder even as the male shoved them into the edge of the table. Hammered Fenris's spine into the metal, hard enough that bone cracked. Run! Aelin did not hesitate. She sprinted for the tent flaps, and into the morning beyond. Half a mile to the center of the camp, to the tent. The soldiers had responded as Rowan anticipated, and he'd killed them accordingly. Birds of prey dove for him, attacking with wind and ice from above. He shattered their magic with a surge of his own, sending them scattering. A cluster of warriors charged from behind a row of tents. Some beheld him and ran back the way they'd come, all soldiers who he'd trained, and some he hadn't. Yet many stayed to fight. Rowan ripped through their shields, ripped the air from their lungs. Some found his hatchet swinging for their necks. Close, so close to that tent. He would signal Lorcan and Gavriel in a moment, when he was close enough to need the diversion for the way out. Another onslaught of soldiers barreled for him, and Rowan angled his long knife. His power blasted away their fired arrows, then blasted away the archers, turning them all to bloodied splinters. Chapter 28. Aelin ran. Her weakened legs stumbled on the grass, her still-bound hands restricting the full range of motion, but she ran. Picked a direction, any direction but the river mists to her left, and ran. The sun was rising, in the army camp. There was motion behind her, shouting. She blocked it out and aimed right, toward the rising sun, as if it were Mala's own welcoming embrace. She couldn't get down enough air through the mask's thin slit, but she kept moving, racing past tents, past soldiers who whipped their heads toward her as if puzzled. She clenched the poker in her ironclad hands, refusing to see what the commotion was if Cairn raged behind her. But then she heard them, bellowed orders. Rushing steps in the grass behind closing in. People ahead alerted by their cries. Bare feet flying over the ground, her exhausted legs screamed to stop. Still, Aelin aimed for the eastern horizon, toward the trees and mountains, toward the sun cresting over them. And when the first of the soldiers blocked her path, shouting to stop, she angled the iron poker and did not falter. Death sang to Lorcan. From the birds of prey that speared farther and farther into the camp, he knew Whitethorn was close to Cairn's tent. Soon now, they'd get the signal. Lorcan and Gavriel steadied their breathing, readying their power. It thrummed through them, twin waves cresting. But death began beckoning elsewhere in the camp. Closer to them, moving fast. Lorcan scanned the brightening sky, the line of the first tents. The entrance with the guards.
Someone's making a move this way,
Lorcan murmured to Gavriel.
But Whitethorn's still over there.
Fenris? Or Connell, perhaps. Maybe Essar's sister, who he'd never liked. But he wouldn't give a shit about that if she hadn't betrayed them. He pointed north of the entrance.
You take that side. Be ready to strike from the flank.
Gavriel sped off, a predator ready to pounce unseen when Lorcan attacked head-on. Death glimmered. Whitethorn was nearly at the camp's center. And that force approaching their eastern entrance. To hell with waiting. Lorcan broke from the cover of trees, dark power swirling, primed to meet whatever broke through the line of tents. Freeing the sword at his side, he searched the sky, the camp, the world as death flickered, as the rising sun gilded the rolling grasses and set the dew steaming. Nothing. No indication of what, of who. He'd reached the first of the hollows that flowed to the camp edge, the dips narrow and steep, when Aelin Galathinius appeared. Lorcan didn't expect the sob in his throat as she raced between the tents, as he beheld the iron mask and the chains on her, hands still bound. as he beheld the blood soaking her skin, the short white shift, her hair longer than he'd last seen and plastered to her head with gore. His knees stopped working, and even his magic faltered at the sight of her wild, desperate race for the camp's edge. Soldiers ran toward her. Lorkin surged into motion, flaring his magic up and wide. Not to her, but to Whitethorn, still charging for the center of the camp. "She's here, she's here, she's here," he signaled. But Lorkin was too far, the grassy bumps and hollows between them now endless. As 10 soldiers converged on Aelin, blocking her path toward the open field. One swung his sword, a strike that would cleave her head in two. The fool didn't realize who he faced, what he faced. That it wasn't a fire-breathing queen bound in iron who charged at him, but an assassin. With a twist, arms lifting, Aelin met that sword head-on, just as she'd planned. The male sword fell short of his intended target, but hit precisely where she wished, in the center of the chains that bound her hands. Iron snapped. Then the male sword was in her freed hands. Then his throat was spraying blood. Aelin whirled, slamming into the other soldiers who stood between her and freedom. Even as he ran for her, Lorkin could only gape at what unfolded. She struck before they knew where to turn. Slash, duck, lunge. She got her other hand on one of their daggers. Then it was over. Then there was nothing between her and the camp entrance but the 6 guards drawing their weapons. Lorkin lashed out with his magic, a lethal net of power that had those guards crashing to their knees, necks snapped. Aelin didn't falter as they wilted to the ground. She charged past, aiming straight for the field and hills, to where Lorkin ran for her. He signaled again, "To me, to me." Whether Aelin recognized it or him, she still raced his way. Whole. Her body looked whole, and yet she was so thin, her blood-splattered legs straining to keep her upright. A rolling field of steep bumps and hollows lay between them. Lorkin swore. She wouldn't make it, not over that terrain, not drained like that. But she did. Aelin vanished into the first dip, and Lorkin's magic flared over and over, to her, to Whitethorn. And then she was up, cresting the hill, and he could see the slowness taking over, the sheer exhaustion from a body at its limit. Arrows twanged from bows, and a wall of them shot into the sky, aiming for her on those exposed hills. Lorkin sent a wave of his power, snapping them away. Still more fired. Single shots this time, from so many directions he couldn't trace their sources. Trained archers, some of Maeve's best. Aelin had to. She already was. Aelin began zagging, depriving them of an easy target. Left to right, she darted over the hills, slower with each bump she cleared, each step toward Lorkin as he raced to her, 100 yards remaining between them. An arrow speared for her back. But Aelin lunged to the side, skidding in grass and dirt. She was up again in a heartbeat, weapons still in hand, charging for the hills and hollows between them. Another arrow aimed for her, and Lorkin made to snap it away. A wall of glittering gold got there first. From the north, leaping over the hollows, charged Gavriel. Aelin disappeared into a dip in the earth, and when she emerged, the lion ran at her side, a golden shield around her. Not close to her, but in the air around them. Unable to fully touch her with the iron mask, the chains draped around her torso, the iron gauntlets on her hands. Soldiers were spilling out of the camp, and Lorkin sent a black wind whipping for them. Where it touched them, they died. And those who did not found an impenetrable shield barring the way to the field. He spread it as wide as he could. Blood oath or no, they were still his people, his soldiers. He'd prevent their deaths if he could, save them from themselves. Aelin was stumbling now, and Lorkin cleared the last of the hills between them. He opened his mouth, to shout what he didn't know, but a cry pierced the blue sky. The sob that came out of Aelin at the hawk's bellow of fury cracked Lorkin's chest. But she kept running for the trees, for their cover. Lorkin and Gavriel fell into step beside her, and when she again stumbled, those two thin legs giving out, Lorkin gripped her under the arm and hauled her along. Fast as a shooting star, Rowan dove for them. He reached them as they passed the first of the trees, shifting as he landed. They threw themselves into a halt, Aelin sprawling onto the pine-covered ground. Rowan was instantly before her, hands going to the mask on her face, the chains, the blood coating her arms, her torn body. Aelin let out another sob, and then moaned,
"Fenris."
It took Lorkin a moment to understand. Took her pointing behind them, to the camp, as she said again, as if speech was beyond her,
"Fenris."
Her breath was a wet rasp, a plea, a broken, bloody plea. Fenris remained with Cairn, in the camp. Aelin pointed again, sobbing. Rowan turned from his mate. The rage in Rowan's eyes could devour the world. And that rage was about to extract the sort of vengeance only a mated male could command. Rowan's canines flashed, but his voice was deadly soft as he said to Lorkin,
"Take her to the glen."
A jerk of his chin to Gavriel,
"You're with me."
With a final look toward Aelin, his frozen rage a brewing storm on the wind, the prince and the lion were gone, charging back toward the chaotic, bloody camp. Chapter 29. With the camp in outright chaos, it was far easier to slip in. Rowan's power blasted to the western edge, shattering tent and bone. Any soldiers lingering between the camp's eastern edge and the center ran toward it, clearing the way, right to the tent he'd been so close to reaching when Lorkin's power had flared. A signal. That they'd found her. Or she had found them, it seemed. And when Rowan had seen her, first from the skies and then beside her, when he smelled the blood, both her own and others, when he beheld the chains and the iron mask clamped over her face, when she was sobbing at the sight of him, terror and despair coating her scent. The rage that roiled through him had no space for mercy, no room for compassion. There was neither in him as he and Gavriel snuck past the last cluster of tents, to the large one situated in a cleared circle of grass, as if no one could stomach being near Cairn. Fenris was with her, or had been. From the quiet inside, he wondered if the wolf was dead. Gavriel shifted into his fey form and freed a knife at his hip. An exchanged glance conveyed the order for silence as Rowan sent a wisp of wind floating into the tent. It sang back to him of two life forms, both injured, blood thick in the air. It was all he needed. Silent as the breeze in the grass, they slipped between the tent flaps. Rowan didn't know where to look first. At the wolf and fey male sprawled on the floor, or at the iron coffin across the tent. The iron box they'd locked her in. Had to reinforce, it seemed, from the sloppy welding on the thick slabs atop it. The box was so small, so narrow. The smell of her blood, her fear, saturated the tent, emanated from that box. A metal table lay nearby, and beneath it. Rowan took in the three unlit braziers set beneath it, the chain anchors at the head and foot of the table, and at last looked toward the fey male left bloodied, but still alive, on the floor across from Fenris. Fenris, whom Gavriel was already crouched over, the golden light of his power wrapped around the blood-soaked fur, healing him. The white wolf did not rise to consciousness, but his breathing steadied. Good enough.
"Heal him," Rowan said with lethal softness.
The lion looked up, and found that Rowan's gaze was no longer on the wolf, but on Cairn. Chunks of flesh had been torn from Cairn's body. A lump on his temple told Rowan it had been the blow that had rendered him unconscious. as if Fenris had slammed Cairn's skull into the side of that metal table, and then collapsed himself mere feet away. Collapsed, perhaps not from the wounds themselves, but... Rowan started. What had happened here? What had been so terrible that the wolf had been able to do the impossible to spare Aelin from enduring it? Gabriel's tawny eyes flashed with wariness. Rowan pointed at Cairn again.
Heal him.
They did not have much time. Not to do what he wanted, what he needed. Some of the drawers in the tall chest had been knocked free. Polished tools glinted within. A pouch of them had also been set on a piece of black velvet beside the metal table. Her blood sang to him of pain and despair, of utter terror. His fire heart. Gavriel's magic shimmered, golden light settling over Cairn. Rowan surveyed the tools Cairn had laid out, the ones in the drawer. Carefully, thoughtfully, he selected one. A thin, razor-sharp knife. A healer's tool, meant for sleek incisions and scraping out rot. Cairn groaned as unconsciousness gave way. By the time Cairn awoke, chained to that metal table, Rowan was ready. Cairn beheld who stood over him, the tool in Rowan's tattooed hand. The others he had also laid out on that piece of velvet, and began thrashing. The iron chains held firm. Then Cairn beheld the frozen rage in Rowan's eyes, understood what he intended to do with that sharp, sharp knife. A dark stain spread across the front of Cairn's pants. Rowan wrapped an ice-kissed wind around the tent, blocking out all sound, and began. Chapter 30. The clash of conflict echoed across the land, even from miles away. Deep in the rough hills of an ancient forest, Elid had waited for hours. First shivering in the dark, then watching the sky bleed to gray, then at last blue. And with that final transition, the clamor had started. She'd alternated between pacing through the mossy glen, weaving amongst the gray boulders strewn between the trees, and sitting in the thrumming silence against one of the towering wide-trunked trees, making herself as small and quiet as possible. Gavriel had sworn none of the strange or fell beasts in these lands would prowl so close to Dorinel, but she didn't want to risk it. So she remained in the glen, where she'd been told to wait. Wait for them. Or wait for things to go badly enough that she had to find her own way. Perhaps she'd seek out Essar if it should come to that. It wouldn't come to that. She swore it over and over. It couldn't come to that. The morning sun was beginning to warm the chilled shade when she saw them. Saw them before she heard them, because their feet were silent on the forest floor, thanks to their immortal grace and training. The breath shuddered out of her as Lorcan emerged between two moss-crusted trees, eyes already fixed on her. And a step behind him, staggering along. Elid didn't know what to do, with her body, her hands. Didn't know what to say as Aelin stumbled over root and rock, the mask and the chains clanking, blood soaking her. Not just blood from her own wounds, but those of others. She was thin, her golden hair so much longer, too long, even with the time apart. It fell nearly to her navel, most of it dark with caked blood, as if she'd run through a rain of it. No sign of Rowan or Gavriel, but no grief on Lorcan's face, nothing beyond urgency, given how he monitored the sky, the trees, searching for any pursuit. Aelin halted at the edge of the clearing. Her feet were bare, and the thin, short shift she wore revealed no major injuries. But there was little recognition in Aelin's eyes, shadowed with the mask. Lorcan said to the queen, "We'll wait here for them." Aelin, as if her body didn't quite belong to her, lifted her shackled, metal-encased hands. The chain linking them had been severed and hung in pieces off either manacle.
the same with those at her ankles. She tugged at one of the metal gauntlets. It didn't budge. She tugged again. The gauntlet didn't so much as shift.
Take it off.
Her voice was low, gravelly. Elide didn't know which of them she'd ordered, but before she could cross the clearing, Lorkin gripped the queen's wrist to examine the locks. One corner of his mouth tightened. There was no easy way to free them then. Elide approached, her limp deep once more with Gavriel's magic occupied. The gauntlets had been locked at her wrist, overlapping slightly with the shackle. Both had small keyholes. Both were made from iron. Elide shifted slightly, bracing her weight on her uninjured leg, to get a view of where the mask was bound to the back of Aelin's head. That lock was more complicated than the others, the chains thick and ancient. Lorkin had fitted the tip of a slender dagger into the lock of the gauntlet, and was now angling it, trying to pick the mechanism.
Take it off.
The queen's guttural words were swallowed by the moss-crusted trees.
I'm trying,
Lorkin said, not gently, though certainly without his usual coldness. The dagger scraped in the lock, but to no avail.
Take it off,
the queen began trembling.
I'm...
Aelin snatched the dagger from him, metal clicking on metal as she fitted the blade's tip into the lock. The dagger shook in her iron-clad hand.
Take it off,
she breathed, lips curling back from her teeth.
Take it off.
Lorkin made to grab the dagger, but she angled away. He snapped,
These locks are too clever. We need a proper locksmith.
Panting through her clenched teeth, Aelin dug and twisted the dagger into the gauntlet's lock. A snap cracked through the clearing.
But not the lock.
Aelin withdrew the dagger to reveal the broken, chipped point. A shard of metal tumbled from the lock and into the moss. Aelin stared at the broken blade, at the shard in the greenery cushioning her bare, bloodied feet, her breaths coming faster and faster. Then she dropped the dagger into the moss, began clawing at the shackles on her arms, the gauntlets on her hands, the mask on her face.
Take it off,
she begged, as she scratched and tugged and yanked.
Take it off!
Elide reached a hand for her, to stop her before she ripped the skin clean off her bones, but Aelin dodged away, staggering deeper into the clearing. The queen dropped to her knees, bowing over them, and clawed at the mask. It didn't so much as move. Elide glanced to Lorkin. He was frozen, eyes wide as Aelin knelt in the moss, as her breathing became edged with sobs. He had done this, led them to this. Elide stepped toward Aelin. The queen's gauntlets drew blood where they scraped into her neck, her jaw, as she heaved against the mask.
Take it off!
The plea turned into a scream.
Take it off!
Over and over, the queen screamed it.
Take it off! Take it off! Take it off!
She was sobbing amid her screaming, the sounds shattering through the ancient forest. She said no other words, pleaded to no gods, no ancestors. Only those words again and again and again. Take it off. Take it off. Take it off. Movement broke through the trees behind them, and the fact that Lorkin did not go for his weapons told Elide who it was. But any relief was short-lived as Rowan and Gavrielle emerged, a massive white wolf hauled between them. The wolf whose jaws had clamped around Elide's arm, tearing flesh to the bone. Fenris. He was unconscious, tongue lagging from his bloodied maw. Rowan had barely entered the clearing before he set down the wolf and stalked for Aelin. The prince was covered in blood. From his unhindered steps, Elide knew it wasn't his. From the blood coating his chin, his neck, she didn't want to know. Aelin ripped at the immovable mask, either unaware or uncaring of the prince before her. Her consort, husband, and mate.
Aelin.
Take it off, take it off, take it off. Her screams were unbearable.
worse than those that day on the beach in Ilway. Gabriel came to stand beside Elide, his golden skin pale as he took in the frantic queen. Slowly, Rowan knelt before her.
Aelin.
She only tipped her head up to the forest canopy and sobbed. Blood ran down her neck from the scratches she'd dug into her skin, mingling with what already coated her. Rowan reached out a trembling hand, the only sign of the agony Elide had little doubt was coursing through him. Gently, he laid his hands on her wrists. Gently, he closed his fingers around them, halting the brutal clawing and digging. Aelin sobbed, her body shuddering with the force of it.
Take it off!
Rowan's eyes flickered, panic and heartbreak and longing shining there.
I will. But you have to be still, Fireheart. Just for a few moments.
Take it off!
The sobs ebbed, tricking into something broken and raw. Rowan ran his thumbs over her wrists, over those iron shackles, as if it were nothing but her skin. Slowly, her shaking eased. No. Not eased, Elide realized, as Rowan rose to his feet and stalked behind the queen. But contained, turned inward. Tremors rippled through Aelin's tense body, but she kept still as Rowan examined the lock. Yet something like shock, then horror and sorrow flashed over his face as he surveyed her back. It was gone as soon as it appeared. A glance, and Gavriel and Lorkin drifted to his side, their steps slow, unthreatening. Across the small clearing, Fenris remained out, his white coat soaked with blood. Elide only walked to Aelin and took up the spot where Rowan had been. The queen's eyes were closed, as if it took all her concentration to remain still for another heartbeat, to allow them to look, to not claw at the irons. So Elide said nothing, demanded nothing from her, save for a companion if she needed one. Behind Aelin, Rowan's blood-splattered face was grim, while he studied the lock fastening the mask's chains to the back of her head. His nostrils flared slightly. Rage. Frustration.
I've never seen a lock like this,
Gavriel murmured. Aelin began shaking again. Elide put a hand on her knee. Aelin had scraped it raw, mud and grass stuck in her blood-crusted skin. She waited for the queen to shove her hand away, but Aelin didn't move. Kept her eyes shut, her ragged breathing holding steady. Rowan gripped one of the chains binding the mask and nodded to Lorkin.
The other one.
Silently, Lorkin grasped the opposite end. They'd sever the iron if they had to. Elide held her breath as both males strained, arms shaking. Nothing. They tried again. Aelin's breathing hitched. Elide tightened her hand on the queen's knee.
She managed to snap the chains on her ankles and hands, Gavriel observed. They're not indestructible.
But with the chains on the mask so close to her head, a swipe of a sword was impossible. Or perhaps the mask had been made from far stronger iron. Rowan and Lorkin grunted as they heaved against the chains. It was of little use. Panting softly, they paused. Red welts shone on their hands. They'd tried to use their magic to break the iron. Silence fell through the clearing. They couldn't linger here, not for much longer. But to take Aelin in the chains, when she was so frantic to be free of them? Aelin's eyes opened. They were empty. Wholly drained. A warrior accepting defeat. Elide blurted, scrambling for anything to banish that emptiness.
Was there ever a key? Did you see them using a key?
Two blinks, as if that meant something. Rowan and Lorkin yanked again, straining. But Aelin's stare fell to the moss, the stones, narrowed slightly as if the question had settled. Through the small hole in her mask, Aleid could barely see her mouth the words, a key.
I don't have it. We don't have them,
Aleid said, sensing the direction of Aelin's thoughts.
Manon and Dorian do.
Quiet,
Lorcan hissed. Not at the level of her voice, but the deadly information Aleid revealed. Aelin again blinked twice with that strange intentionality. Rowan snarled at the chains, heaving again. But Aelin stretched out a hand to the moss and traced a shape.
What is that?
Aleid leaned forward as the queen did it again, her hollow face unreadable. The Fey males paused at her question and watched Aelin's finger move through the green.
A word mark,
Rowan said softly.
To open.
Aelin traced it again, mute and still, as if none of them stood there.
They work on iron?
Gavriel asked, tracking Aelin's finger.
She unlocked iron doors in Otterland's royal library with that symbol,
Rowan murmured.
But she needed...
He let his words hang unfinished as he picked up the broken knife Aelin had discarded in the moss nearby and sliced it across his palm. Kneeling before her, he extended his bloodied hand.
Show me, Fireheart. Show me again.
He tapped her ankle, the shackle there. Silently, her movements stiff, Aelin leaned forward. She sniffed at the blood pooling in his hand, her nostrils flaring. Her eyes lifted to his, like the scent of his blood posed some question.
I am your mate,
Rowan whispered, as if it was the answer she sought. And the love in his eyes, in the way his voice broke, his bloodied hand trembling. Aelin's throat tightened. Aelin only looked at the blood pooling in his cupped palm, her fingers curled, the gauntlet clicking, as if it were another answer too.
She can't do it with the iron, Aelin said. If it's on her hands, it interferes with the magic in the blood.
A blink from her, in that silent language.
It's why she put them on you, isn't it?
Aelin said, her chest straining.
To be sure you couldn't use your own blood with the word marks to free yourself.
As if all the other iron wasn't already enough. Another blink, her face still so hollow and cold.
Tired.
Rowan's jaw clenched, but he just dipped his finger into the blood in his palm and offered his hand to her.
Show me, Fireheart,
he said again. Aelin could have sworn he shuddered, and not from fear, as Aelin's metal-crusted hand closed around his. In halting small movements, she guided his finger to trace the symbol onto the shackle around her ankle. A soft flare of greenish light, then the hiss and sigh of the lock filled the clearing. The shackle tumbled to the moss.
Lorcan swore.
Rowan offered his hand, his blood again. The shackle around her other ankle yielded to the word mark. Then the manacles around her wrists. Then the beautiful, horrible gauntlets thudded to the moss. Aelin lifted her bare hands to her face, reaching for the lock behind the mask, but halted.
I'll do it,
Rowan said, his voice still soft, still full of that love. He moved behind her, and Aelin stared at the horrible mask, the suns and flames carved and embossed along its ancient surface. A flare of light, a click of metal, and then it slid free. Her face was pale. So pale, all traces of the sun-kissed coloring gone. And empty. Aware and yet not.
Wary.
Aelin kept still, letting the queen survey her. The males moved to face her, and Aelin looked upon them in turn. Gavriel, who bowed his head. Lorcan, who stared right back at her, his dark gaze unreadable. And Rowan. Rowan, whose breathing became jagged, his swallow audible.
Aelin?
The name, it seemed, was an unlocking too. Not of the queen she'd so briefly known, but the power inside her. Elide flinched as flame, golden and blazing, erupted around the queen. The shift burned away into ashes. Lorkhan dragged Elide back, and she allowed it, even as the heat vanished, even as the flare of power contracted into an aura around the queen, a shimmering second skin. Aelin knelt there, burning, and did not speak. The flames flickered around her. Though the moss, the roots, did not burn, did not so much as steam. And through the fire, Aelin's now long hair half hiding her nakedness. Elide got a good look at what had been done to her. Aside from a bruise along her ribs, there was nothing. Not a mark. Not a callus. Not a single scar. The ones Elide had marked in those days before Aelin had been taken were gone. As if someone had wiped them away. Chapter 31. They had taken her scars. Maeve had taken them all away. It told Rowan enough about what had been done. When he'd seen her back, the smooth skin where the scars of Endovir and the scars from Cairn's whipping should have been, he'd suspected. But kneeling, burning in nothing but her skin, there were no scars where there should have been. The almost necklace of them from Baba Yellowlegs, gone. The shackle marks from Endovir, gone. The scar where she'd been forced by Arob and Hommel to break her own arm, gone. And on her palms. It was upon her exposed palms that Aelin now gazed, as if realizing what was missing. The scars across her palms, one from the moment they had become Kerenam, the other from her oath to Nehemia, had disappeared entirely, like they had never been. Her flames burned brighter. Healers could remove scars, yes, but the most likely reason for the lack of them on Aelin, on all the places where he'd once traced them with his hands, his mouth, it was new skin. All of it. Save for her face, since he doubted they would be stupid enough to take off the mask. Nearly every inch of her was covered in new skin, unvarnished as fresh snow. The blood coating her had burned away to reveal it. New skin, because they'd needed to replace what had been destroyed, to heal her so they could begin again and again. Gavriel and Elide had moved to where Fenris lay, the battlefield healing the former had done on the warrior, likely not enough to keep death at bay. Gavriel said to no one in particular, "He doesn't have much longer." He'd broken the blood oath. Through sheer will, Fenris had broken it, and would soon pay the price when his life force bled out entirely. Aelin's gaze shifted then, from her hands, her horrifically pristine skin, to the wolf across the clearing. She blinked twice, and then slowly rose. Unaware or uncaring of her nakedness, she took an unsteady step. Rowan was instantly there, or as close as the flames would allow. He could push through, shielding himself in ice or simply by cutting off the air that fed her flames. But to cross that line, to shove into her flames when so much, too much had been stolen from her? He didn't let himself think about the distant, wary recognition on her face when she'd seen him. Seen all of them. As if she wasn't entirely certain to trust them. Trust this. Aelin managed another step, teetering. He glimpsed her neck as she passed. Even the twin bite marks, his mark of claiming, had vanished. Encased in flame, Aelin walked to Fenris. The white wolf did not stir. Sorrow softened her face, even with that quiet distance. Sorrow and gratitude. Gavriel and Elide remained on Fenris's other side as she approached, backed away a step. Not from fear, but to give her space in this moment of farewell. They had to go. Lingering here, despite the miles between them and the camp, was folly. They could carry Fenris until it was over, but Rowan couldn't bring himself to say it. To tell Aelin that it might not be wise to draw out this goodbye the way she needed.
They had minutes, at best, to spare before they had to be on the move. But if scouts or sentries found them, he'd make sure they didn't get close enough to disturb her. Gavriel and Lorkin seemed to be having the same thought, their eyes meeting from across the clearing. Rowan jerked his chin toward the western tree line in silent order. They stalked for it. Aelin knelt beside Fenris, and her flame enveloped them both. The fire gave way to a reddish-gold aura, a shield that he knew would melt the flesh of anyone who tried to cross. It flowed and rippled around them, a bubble of coppery air. And through it, Rowan watched as she ran a hand down the wolf's battered side. Gavriel had healed most of the wounds, but the blood remained. Aelin made long, gentle strokes over his fur, her head angled as she spoke too softly for Rowan to hear. Slowly, painfully, Fenris cracked open an eye. Agony filled it. Agony and yet something like relief and joy at the sight of her bare face. And exhaustion. Such exhaustion that Rowan knew death would be a welcome embrace, a kiss from Silva herself, goddess of gentle ends. Aelin spoke again, the sound either contained or swallowed by her shield. No tears. Only that sorrow and clarity. A queen's face, he realized as Lorkin and Gavriel took up spots along the glen's border. It was a queen's face that looked upon Fenris. A queen who took his massive paw in her hands, pushing back folds of fur and skin to unsheath a curved claw. She slid it over her bare forearm, splitting skin, leaving blood in its wake. Rowan's breath caught. Gavriel and Lorkin whirled toward them. Aelin spoke again, and Fenris blinked once in answer. She deemed that answer enough.
Holy gods,
Lorkin breathed, as Aelin extended her bleeding forearm to Fenris's mouth.
Holy rutting gods.
For Fenris's loyalty, for his sacrifice, there was no greater reward she could offer. To keep him from death, there was no other way to save him. Only this, only the blood oath. And as Fenris managed to lap the blood from her wound, as he swore a silent vow to their queen, blinking a few more times, Rowan's chest became unbearably tight. Severing the blood oath to one queen had snapped his life force, his soul. Swearing the blood oath to another might very well repair that cleaving, the ancient magic binding Fenris's fading life to Aelin's. 3 mouthfuls. That's all Fenris took before he laid his head back on the moss and closed his eyes. Aelin curled on her side next to him, flames encompassing them both. Rowan couldn't move. None of them moved. Aelin mouthed a short, curt word. Fenris did not respond. She spoke again, that queen's face unfaltering.
Live.
She'd used the blood oath to force him to remain on this side of life. Still, Fenris didn't stir. Across the bubble of flame and heat, Elid put a hand over her mouth, eyes shining bright. She'd read the word on Aelin's lips, too. Aelin spoke a third time, teeth flashing as she gave Fenris her first order.
Live.
Rowan didn't breathe as they waited. Long minutes passed. Then Fenris's eyes cracked open. Aelin held the wolf's gaze, nothing in her face save that grave, unyielding command. Slowly, Fenris stirred. His paws shifted beneath him, legs straining. And he rose.
I don't believe it,
Lorkin whispered.
I don't.
But there was Fenris, standing before their now kneeling queen. And there was Fenris, inclining his head, shoulders dipping with him, one paw sweeping before the other, bowing. A ghost of a smile graced her mouth, gone before it ever took form. Aelin remained kneeling, though, even as Fenris surveyed them, surprise and relief lighting his dark eyes. His gaze met Rowan's, and Rowan smiled, bowing his head.
Welcome to the court, pup,
he said, his voice thick. Raw emotion rippled across that lupine face,
and then Fenris turned back to Aelin. She was staring at nothing.
Fenris nudged her shoulder with his furry head. She ran an idle hand through the wolf's white coat. Rowan's heart clenched.
Maeve had cleaved into Rowan's own mind to trick his very instincts.
What had she done to her? What had she done these months?
We need to go,
Gavriel said, his own voice thick as he took in Fenris, standing proud and watchful beside Aelin.
We need to put distance between us and the camp, and find somewhere to halt for the night.
Where they'd reassess how and where to leave this kingdom.
Heading into the forest, toward the mountains, would be their best bet. These trees offered plenty of courage, and plenty of caves in which to hide.
Can you walk?
Lorcan asked Fenris. Fenris slid dark, baleful eyes to Lorcan.
Oh, that fight would come. That vengeance.
The wolf gave him a curt nod. Ilead reached for one of the packs stashed near the base of a tree.
Which way?
But Rowan didn't get to answer. Silent as wraiths, they appeared across the glen, as if they'd simply sparked into existence in the shade of the foliage. Little bodies, some pale, some black as night, some scaled. Mostly concealed, save for spindly fingers and wide, unblinking eyes.
Ilead gasped.
The little folk.
Ilead hadn't seen a whisper of the little folk since the days before Terrasen fell.
Then, it had been flashes and rustling within Oakwall's ancient shade.
Never so many.
Never so openly.
Or as open as they would ever allow themselves to be. The half dozen or so who had gathered across the clearing kept mostly hidden behind root and rock and cluster of leaves. None of the males moved, though Fenris's ears cocked toward them.
A miracle.
That's what had happened with the queen and the wolf. Though Fenris seemed drained, his eyes were clear as the little folk gathered.
Aelin barely looked toward them.
A pale, spindly hand rose over a moss-speckled boulder and curled.
Come,
Rowan asked, voice like granite.
You wish us to follow you?
Again, the hand made the motion.
Come,
Gavriel murmured.
They know this forest better than even we do.
And you trust them?
Lorcan demanded. Rowan's eyes settled on Aelin.
They saved her life once.
That night, Erewhon's assassin had returned for Aelin.
They will do so again now.
Silent and unseen, they passed through the trees and rocks and streams of the ancient forest. Rowan kept a step behind Aelin and Fenris, Gavriel and Ilead at the head of their party, Lorcan at the rear, as they followed the little folk. Aelin had said nothing, done nothing except rise when they told her it was time to go. Rowan had offered her his cloak, and she'd allowed it to pass through her bubble of golden clear flame to wrap around her naked body. She clutched it at her chest as they walked, mile after mile, her feet bare. If the stones and roots of the forest hurt her, she didn't so much as flinch. She only walked on, Fenris at her side within that sphere of fire, as if they were two ghosts of memory. A vision of old, striding through the trees, the queen and the wolf. The others spoke rarely as the hours and miles passed, as the forested hills gave way to steeper inclines, the boulders larger, the rocks and trees broken in spots.
From the ancient wars between the forest spirits,
Gavriel whispered to Ilead, when he noticed her frowning at a hillside full of felled trunks and splintered stone.
Some are still waged by them. Wholly unaware and unconcerned with the affairs of any realm but this.
Rowan had never seen the race of ethereal beings far more ancient and secretive than even the little folk. But at his mountain home, set high in the range that they strode toward, he'd sometimes heard the shattering of rocks and trees on dark, moonless nights, when there was not a whisper of wind on the air, nor any storm to cause them.
So close.
Only 20 or so miles to the mountain house he'd built. He'd planned to take Aelin there one day,
though it was nothing but long-vanished ashes. Just to show her where the house had been, where he'd buried Lyria. She was still up there, his mate who had never been. And his true mate? She strode unwavering through the trees, no more than a wraith. Still, they followed the little folk, who beckoned from a tree, a rock, and shrub ahead, and then vanished. Behind Lorkin, a few others hid their trail with clever hands and small magics. He prayed they had a place to stay for the night, a place where Aelin might sleep, and might remain protected from Maeve's eyes once she realized she'd been tricked. They were headed eastward, far from the coast. Rowan didn't dare risk telling them they needed to find a port. He'd see where they led them tonight, and then craft their plan for returning to their own continent. But when the little folk appeared before a gargantuan boulder, when they then vanished and reappeared in a sliver cut into the rock itself, bony hands beckoning from within, Rowan found himself balking. The creature dwelling in the lake beneath Bald Mountain was a mild threat compared to the other things that still hunted in dark and forgotten places. But the little folk beckoned again. Lorkin appeared at his side. It could be a trap. But Elide and Gavriel walked toward it, unfazed. And behind them, Aelin continued as well. So Rowan followed her, as he would follow her until his last breath and beyond it. The cave mouth was tight, but soon opened into a larger passage. Aelin illuminated the space, bathing the black stone walls in a golden glow bright enough to see by. But her flame was dwarfed when they entered a massive chamber. The ceiling stretched into gloom, but it was not the height of the chamber that made him halt. Nooks and alcoves had been built into the side of the rock, some equipped with bedrolls, some with what seemed to be piles of clothes, and some with food. A small fire burned near one, and past it, tucked against the wall, a natural stone trough gleamed with water, courtesy of a small stream. But farther into the cave, on the other side of the chamber, flowing right up to the black rock itself, a great lake stretched into the darkness. There were countless subterranean lakes and rivers beneath these mountains, places so deep in the earth that even the Fae had not bothered or dared to explore. This one, it seemed, the little folk had claimed for themselves, going so far as to outfit the space with sprawling birch branches against the walls. They'd hung small garlands and wreaths from the white limbs, and amongst the leaves, little bluish lights twinkled. Magic. Old, strange magic, those lights, like they'd been plucked from the night sky. Elide was surveying the space, awe written over her features. Gavriel and Lorkin, however, assessed it with a sharper, warier eye. Rowan did the same. The only exit seemed to be the one they'd entered through, and the lake stretched too far to discern if a shore lay beyond it. Aelin did not pause as she strode for one of the glittering walls. There was none of her usual caution, no dart of her eyes as she weighed the exits and pitfalls, potential weapons to wield. A trance. It was almost as if she had slipped into a trance, plunged into some depthless ocean inside herself, and drifted so far down that they might as well have been birds soaring over its distant surface. But she walked toward that wall, the birch branches artfully displayed across it. More of the little folk within, Rowan realized, perched on the branches, clinging to them. Aelin's steps were silent on the stone. Fenris halted nearby, as if to give her privacy. Rowan had the vague sense of Lorkin, Elide, and Gavriel heading for the alcove across the cave to inspect the goods that had been laid out. But he lingered in the center of the space, as his mate paused before the shining, living wall. There was no expression on her face, no tension in her body. Yet she inclined her head to the little folk half hidden in the branches and boughs before her. Her jaw moved, speaking, brief, short words. He'd never so much as heard of the little folk talking. But there was his queen, his wife, his mate, murmuring with them. At last she turned away,
her face still blank, her wildfire eyes as flat and cold as the lake. Fenris fell into step beside her, and Rowan remained in place as Aelin aimed for the small fire. Safe. The little folk must have told her this cave was safe, if she now moved for the fire, her own sphere of it still burning bright. The others halted their assessment of the supplies. But Aelin paid them no heed, paid the world no heed. As she took up a spot between the fire and the cave wall, lay upon the bare stone, and closed her eyes. Chapter 32. Dorian had brown eyes for 3 days before he figured out how to change them back to blue. Aster and Investa teased him about it mercilessly as they'd traveled down through the spine of the fangs, dramatically bemoaning the absence of his pretty bluebell eyes, and had sighed to the heavens when the sapphire hue had returned. His magic could leap between one element and another, yet the ability to shift lay within something else entirely. Lay within a part of him that had always yearned for one thing above all others, to let go, to be free. As Temis, goddess of wild things, was free, uncaged. As he had once wished to be, when he had been little more than a reckless, idealistic prince. It was the magic soul command, let go. Let go of who and what he'd become since that collar, and emerge into something new, something different. It was easier realized than enacted. Since his eyes had returned to blue, like the unraveling of some thread within him, he'd been unable to do anything else, even change them to brown again. The Crokins and the 13 had halted for their midday break under the heavy cover of Oakwald, the trees barren. Yet not a hint of snow on the earth. Another day, and they'd reached the rendezvous point. A week after they'd promised the Eelway war leaders, but they would arrive. He sat on a fallen, moss-covered log, gnawing on the strip of dried rabbit. His dinner.
My head pounds on your behalf, just watching you try so hard,
Glenys said from across the clearing. Around them, the 13 ate in silence. Manon monitoring all. The Kraken sat amongst them at least, quietly, but they sat there, which meant they all looked at him now. Dorian lowered the strip of tough meat and inclined his head to the crone.
My head is pounding enough for both of us, I think.
What are you trying to turn into, exactly? Or who?
The opposite of what he was. The opposite of the man who'd overlooked Sorsha's presence for years, and offered her only death in the end. He'd be glad to let go of it, if only the magic would allow him.
Nothing, he said.
Many of the 13 and Crokins went back to their meager meals at his dull response.
I just want to see if it's possible, for someone with my manner of magic, to even change small features.
Not a lie, not entirely. Manon frowned, as if trying to work out some puzzle she couldn't quite grasp.
But were you to succeed, Glenys pressed, who would you wish to be?
He didn't know. Couldn't conjure an image beyond empty darkness. Damaris at his side would have no answer either. Dorian peered inward, feeling the sea of magic that roiled inside him. He traced its shape with careful, invisible hands, followed a thread within himself not to his gut, but to his still-cracked heart.
Who do you wish to be?
There, like the seed of power that Cyrene had stolen, it lay. The little snarl in his magic. Not a snarl, but a knot. A knot in a tapestry. One that he might weave. One he might fashion into something if he dared.
Who do you wish to be?
He asked the barely woven tapestry within himself. Let the threads and knots take form, crafting the picture within his mind. Starting small. Glenys chuckled.
Your eyes are green now, King.
Dorian started, heart thundering. The others again halted their lunches, gaping, some leaning in to peer at him more closely. but he fed his magic into the loom within himself, adding to the emerging picture.
Golden hair does not suit you at all,
Asterin grimaced.
You look sickly.
Who did he wish to be? Anyone but himself, but what he'd become. His silent answer sent that magical loom tumbling from his invisible grip. And he knew if he looked, his dark hair and sapphire eyes would have returned. Asterin sighed in relief. But Manon smiled grimly, as if she'd heard his unspoken answer and understood. Night was full overhead, the Kraken's fires crackling away beneath the lattice of leafless trees, when Glennis asked,
Have any of you seen the wastes?
The 13 blinked toward the crone. She didn't usually address them all at once or ask such personal questions. But at least Glennis spoke to them. 3 days of travel and Manon was no closer to winning the Krakens over than she'd been upon their departure from the Fangs. Though they spoke to her, and occasionally joined Glennis's hearth for meals, it was with as few words as necessary. Asterin answered for the coven.
No, not one of us. Though I spent some time in a forest on the other side of the mountains, but never that far.
Sorrow flickered in the witch's gold-flecked black eyes, as if there was more to the tale than that. Indeed, Sorrel and Vesta, even Manon, looked with a bit of that sorrow at the witch. Manon asked Glennis, the sole Kraken at this fire under the canopy.
Why do you ask?
Curiosity, the crone said.
None of us have been either. We do not dare.
For fear of us.
Asterin's golden hair shifted as she leaned closer to the fire. She'd found a strip of leather in the camp to tie across her brow, not the black she'd worn for the past century, but a familiar sight, at least. One thing, it seemed, had not entirely altered.
For fear of what it will do to us, to see what is left of our once great city, our lands.
Nothing but rubble, they say,
Manon muttered.
And would you rebuild it if